lot of cold weather. The snowpack is breaking down. And the snowpack itself, I'm not too concerned about right now. What is concerning me is what's going to happen next.
Unique snow conditions inspire avalanche awareness discussions in Skagway. And KHNS brings you the first in a series of stories about proposed legislation that could determine the future of the Tongass National Forest. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories and more just ahead. One of the last things you want to think about when you're enjoying the wintry backcountry is the danger that surrounds you as a skier, snowboarder, snowshoer, or snow machiner. But those threats, particularly avalanches, are the topic of discussion in a series of free classes ongoing in Skagway.
Basically, what we call avalanche awareness.
John Briner is already a familiar name in Skagway winter sports. He's worked as a ski instructor and patrolman and has held a recreational interest in snow science for 30 years.
My professional friends would call me an amateur snow geek because I'm fascinated by the snow. I'm fascinated by what it does and what it can do, and avalanches fall right into that.
But in encouraging his neighbors to take up new backcountry sports over the years, he realized they needed more skills than just the basics.
What I looked at was that there's a fair number of people in Skagway that are accessing the backcountry, whether it's on snow machines or snowboards or cross-country skis. And one of the things that I've noticed over the years is that there are people that tend to go out with the right equipment, but they often don't go out with much knowledge at all.
But it's more than that, as most winter athletes would agree. Sometimes your survival in a precarious situation is only as good as your buddy's awareness and rescue skills.
One of the things I really looked at is, one, because I ski with a lot of these people, and we have friends that are snow machiners and stuff, if anything were to happen to me, I'd sure like to have everybody around me know as much as they could about getting me out.
Last year, a Canadian man near Fraser Customs survived an avalanche when he was buried up to his waist in snow. But our area isn't really known to be as avalanche-prone as other, more populated ski areas.
Our potential, let's just say, is less. That's good, but it's also bad because it does put us in that sense of, well, I've never seen that slide, so I'm going to go up it, or I'm going to ski down it, or I'm going to cross underneath it on a pair of snowshoes.
However, Briner says this year's unique snow conditions inspired him and the Skagway Recreation Center to get together and offer this series on avalanche awareness. Briner explains.
The snowpack and the snow conditions around Southeast Alaska are changing. Whether it's global warming or whether it's a cyclical nature, I've talked to some of the avalanche professionals about it, and that's their sense, too. Right now, the snowpack on the top of White Pass, and I can only talk about, what's in my immediate area, because I know your guys over there have, a little different situation snowpack-wise, is it's very thin. We've had a lot of cold weather. The snowpack is breaking down. And the snowpack itself, I'm not too concerned about right now. What is concerning me is what's going to happen next, which will all depend on snowfall. We could see a lot of avalanche activity if we got a big, heavy snowfall on top of what's there now. If we get a couple of smaller ones, warm storms, it can stabilize out. So, to me, history is never a good thing to look at as far as avalanches.
Avalanche 1, 2, and so on are typical certifications on the checklist of many devoted winter sports enthusiasts and rescue workers. But it's not so simple for people of the Northern Panhandle to take part in them before their winter season. Some courses are taught through the University of Alaska Southeast, and others are offered in Haines at the beginning of heli-ski season.
My experience has been people come out of those classes and they've got so much information, and it's all good information, and yet the next day they go out skiing, it's filed way back in the brain, and the brain goes to, okay, come on, let's get out of here and let's go skiing. And so what I really wanted to do was look at, what's the simplest information, just give them the very basic things that will at least open their eyes to what the potentials are.
The Skagway Rec Center series is meant to be less technical, less scientific than longer courses, says Briner.
It's pretty simple. It's just 7 things as far as that you need to look at and you need to be aware of all the time you're out there. And it just helps you know, helps you make some, you know, some of the right decisions, I think.
The classes are in Skagway each Wednesday night through early February from 7 to 8 p.m. They're offered through the Skagway Recreation Center and the Multipurpose Room. Everyone's welcome to drop in anytime, and it's free. Again, instructor John Briner.
You know, to me, it's anybody that's going out in the backcountry during the winter, and whether you're a snow machiner or whether you're a snowshoer, a cross-country skier, or a backcountry skier.
The new year will bring a new fight over Southeast Alaska's land selection legislation. The bill, which will be reintroduced in the new Congress, could determine the future of tens of thousands of acres of Southeast Alaska's Tongass National Forest, including large areas of land on the eastern and southern sides of the Northern Lynn Canal. Backers say the measure will revitalize the troubled timber industry and help villages struggling to sustain their economies. Opponents say it'll destroy valuable wildlands and hurt tourism, subsistence hunting, and commercial fishing. This month, Southeast Alaska reporters worked together to take an in-depth look at some of the controversies surrounding the bill, which was a major issue in last year's U.S. Senate race. In the first of six reports, which will be aired daily over the next week on KHNS News, Ed Schoenfeld examines why Sea Alaska is seeking new land selections.
Salisbury Sound, north of Sitka, can be a tumultuous place. Pacific Ocean waters and winds meet inside passage currents here to kick up powerful waves that dash against the rocky shores. But on this day, only gentle swells rock the boat. Binoculars-clad visitors admire the spruce hemlock forests reflected in a protected inlet surface. They photograph the rugged, mist-shrouded mountains and scan the kelp beds for otters. But the landscape, like these waters, can kick up a storm. 76 acres near this sound and another 85,000 or so elsewhere in Southeast are being claimed by the Panhandle's Regional Native Corporation. It's part of a controversial economic development plan proposed by Sea Alaska, whose 20,000 shareholders descended from the land's first residents.
The region needs help, and we believe that our land entitlement legislation is a significant part of that.
Chris McNeil is president and CEO of Sea Alaska, which has already selected close to 300,000 acres in the region. More than two-thirds of that was forested, and most has been logged, selectively, or through clear cuts. But the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, which created this and a dozen other regional corporations, promised more. Sea Alaska could, right now, claim the remaining land it's owned from within box-shaped boundaries surrounding shareholders' home communities. But Senator Lisa Murkowski's staffer, Kevin Sweeney, told those at a meeting in Sitka last year that there are reasons to look elsewhere.
Sea Alaska was a little different than the rest of the regional corporations in that they were limited to select lands around 10 villages in Southeast. And the problem that Sea Alaska sees is that while there are 327,000 acres still available in those boxes, 44% of that is actually saltwater.
Corporation officials say most of that inside the box acreage should be kept public as part of the Tongass. That would protect roadless areas, watersheds, and land used for subsistence hunting and fishing.
We have 70,000 acres of selection rights in the Yakutat area, much of it along the Setuck River corridor.
Rick Harris is Sea Alaska's executive vice president. He says land along the salmon-producing river is not a good place for economic development, the purpose of most selections, and neither are many other locations within the Claims Act's boundaries.
We have selection rights in the City of Craig's municipal watershed. We already own several municipal watersheds or portions of them, and we really don't think that the community would like us to own more land in their municipal watershed.
But opponents say the land Sea Alaska wants to claim has many of the same reasons to be protected.
If they did significant clear cutting in some of those key locations, it's going to potentially affect Native villages' quality of their drinking water. It could affect their ability to hunt and fish.
Lindsay Ketchell of the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council says she's not against Sea Alaska claiming land outside the boxes. But SEAC and other environmental groups continue to oppose most of Sea Alaska's proposed selections.
When Sea Alaska has selected areas outside the box, they've gone after old growth reserves. They've gone after old forest research farms where there are some of the biggest and best trees out there. And I think that they've got to lower their sights.
Most of the land in question, about 80,000 acres, is on or near Prince of Wales Island. Sea Alaska wants it for logging, spread out over several decades. Much of the rest is in small parcels throughout the region called future sites, where development, possibly tourism or energy production, might take place. What remains is sacred sites, those of historic or cultural value, including old village or fish camp locations, plus some migration routes. Sea Alaska CEO Chris McNeil says the timber and future sites are part of a regional plan.
What we're trying to achieve for our tribal member shareholders is a development of sustainable economies in the region.
The land selection plan has been before Congress since 2007. Sea Alaska officials hope for action on the bill by now, and Congressman Young and Senator Murkowski both plan to reintroduce the legislation this year. Sea Alaska's Rick Harris says the corporation is patient. Opponents, including environmental groups, say they're also prepared for the long haul. This is Ed Schoenfeld.
Stay tuned to KHNS Local News for the next five reports in the series. Other reports in the Sea Alaska Land Selection Legislation series look at the bill's environmental and economic impacts, details of planned futures and sacred sites, and its chances in Congress. This is Tara Bicknell for KHNS News.